As arrests continue, with at least 3,080 people currently detained, there are reports that 23 people have been sentenced to death.
Myanmar coup teeters on edge of conflict. It's Thursday, April 15th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online. We're at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, journalists a target in Myanmar, a vaccine pause, Filipino coffee and new farm tech, protecting packages, saving sea turtles. It's all on today's VOA Asia. We have much to hear on developments about Myanmar, those in just a moment. But first, President Biden has formally announced all U.S. troops will leave Afghanistan by September 11th, 20 years after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. U.S. military involvement in Afghanistan is the longest war in U.S. history.
We were attacked. We went to war with clear goals. We achieved those objectives. Bin Laden is dead, and al-Qaeda is degraded in Iraq, in Afghanistan. And it's time to end the forever war.
We will have more on President Biden's announcement today from the White House on VOA Asia's social media and on this program tomorrow. United Nations Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet is calling for urgent international action to get Myanmar's military leadership to stop slaughtering its people. If this continues, Bachelet warns, civil war akin to what has happened in Syria is likely to break out in Myanmar. Lisa Schlein is in Geneva, from where she shares more details.
Human Rights Chief Bachelet is calling on all states with influence, especially Myanmar's neighbors, to apply concerted pressure on the ruling military junta to end its campaign of repression and slaughter of its people. She says many of the grave human rights violations being committed by Myanmar's military might amount to crimes against humanity and must be stopped. Bachelet spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says the High Commissioner fears a continuation of these crimes could tear the country apart and lead to a civil war like that in Syria.
The High Commissioner states that there are clear echoes of Syria in 2011. There, too, we saw peaceful protests met with unnecessary and clearly disproportionate force. The state's brutal, persistent repression of its own people led to some individuals taking up arms, followed by a downward and rapidly expanding spiral of violence all across the country.
Syria's decade-long civil war has had disastrous consequences. The United Nations estimates 400,000 people have died. 11.7 million are displaced both within and as refugees, and more than 11 million people need international aid to survive. Shamdasani says credible reports indicate the past weekend in Myanmar was particularly murderous. She says the country's armed forces, known as the Tatmadaw, attacked civilians with rocket-propelled grenades and mortar fire, killing at least 82 people. She says some people are using makeshift or primitive weapons in self-defense, and clashes between the military and ethnic armed groups in Kachin, Shan, and Kain State are intensifying.
As arrests continue, with at least 3,080 people currently detained, there are reports that 23 people have been sentenced to death following secret trials, including four protesters and 19 others who were accused of political and criminal offenses. The mass arrests have forced hundreds of people to go into hiding.
Shamdasani says the country's economic, education and health infrastructure are at the point of collapse. She says millions of people have lost their livelihoods and COVID-19 measures have been brought to a standstill. Bachelet calls the situation untenable. She says nations must cut off the supply of arms and finances to the military leadership that allow it to kill and seriously violate its people's human rights. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The story is developing. We invite you to read more by following us on Twitter at VOA Asia, also on Facebook, and visit us at voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. aid groups step in amid ongoing violence in Myanmar. Chinese and U.S. military exercises are now new norm in disputed Asian Sea. Taliban shun Afghanistan talks until foreign forces leave. We need a voice at peace talks, Afghanistan's female journalists say. South Korea considers actions against Japan over plan to release radioactive water from Fukushima plant. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more are found on Facebook at VOA Asia and our website, voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We continue with VOA Asia. The Myanmar army is attacking journalists and increasing censorship in its deadly crackdown against opponents of the February coup. Five major media groups have been banned, and the internet has been shut down. But Burmese journalists are not giving up. For VOA, Steve Sanford reports from Mae Sot, Thailand.
On the walls of the Assistance Association for Political Prisoners, the Myanmar Army's legacy of brutality during the 1988 crackdown is clear. The association, founded by former Burmese political prisoners living in exile, is working to help other political prisoners and document abuses. It posts daily updates on post-coup attacks on civilians, including those charged, arrested, or killed by security forces. While the military has banned five major networks and increased internet restrictions, the group says modern technology will help them get the truth out.
This era is the 21st century, a time of rapid development. No matter what the military tries to do to threaten our lives, they can't stop us from reporting the tragic news.
Media groups like Burma News International have gone remote, due in part to the COVID crisis, and rely heavily on the internet. But the decision this week by Myanmar satellite companies to stop international broadcasts of banned media groups has increased pressure to get the news out by any means.
This time we have to rely on the community journalists, you know, the CJ, and also like some of the stringers. Since there's internet like a limitation, we have to rely on the phone. We can get the information, but it's difficult to send the photos and video.
Civil society groups and rights activists have joined in the struggle, holding rallies in neighboring countries like Thailand. With help from migrants and exiles, many social media sites are able to repost damning video clips recorded in Myanmar's new conflict zones.
I want to give a message to the protesters inside Myanmar that if the military had cut off the internet, keep filming the video and take pictures of the evidence. Then send all the evidence you guys have to us when you have a chance. Then we will post that in the public.
As the Myanmar army continues to limit free expression and suppress the documentation of human rights abuses, media groups reach out to new contributors and old methods to get the facts out to the world. Steve Sanford for VOA News, Chiang Mai, Thailand.
Happening now in Asia, anti-coup demonstrators in Myanmar held a march Wednesday in a town known for its jade mines on the second day of Myanmar's traditional New Year holiday period. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We hope you're enjoying the day, and we're glad you're with us on VOA Asia. Several U.S. states have temporarily stopped providing Johnson & Johnson coronavirus vaccines in line with federal guidance after six people who received the shots developed rare blood clots. Meanwhile, several countries have suspended the AstraZeneca vaccines after reports that it, too, may be linked to blood clots. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara reports.
U.S. federal health agencies called for the suspension of the Johnson & Johnson coronavirus vaccine on Tuesday after six women developed rare blood clots within 2 weeks of receiving the shot. Experts say the clots were observed in the sinuses of the brain. One woman died. Almost 7 million Johnson & Johnson shots have been delivered in the U.S., making the risk less than 1 in a million, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The White House said the pause has been put in place out of an abundance of caution and will not significantly impact vaccine rollout.
The J&J vaccine makes up less than 5% of the more than 190 million recorded shots in arms in the United States to date.
The Biden administration says the U.S. has secured enough Pfizer and Moderna doses for 300 million Americans and will continue to administer an average of over 3 million shots per day. Still, the Johnson & Johnson suspension is expected to scare off those already hesitant to get vaccinated. That's about 20% of Americans, according to polls. It will also make it harder to reach underserved communities since J&J doses do not have to be stored at ultra-cold temperatures and is the only single-shot vaccine being used in the U.S.
Think about homeless populations, where it's very difficult to find those people a second time. So even if you go out to, you know, mobile clinics to certain populations, it's just very hard to get to them twice. And so a single dose vaccine is a great tool for that kind of vaccine outreach.
Meanwhile, several countries have either suspended the AstraZeneca vaccine or stopped giving it to younger people, also due to the potential danger of rare blood clots.
The J&J vaccine and the AstraZeneca vaccine are made in very similar ways, different from Moderna and Pfizer. And of course, one of the questions is, if this blood clotting event is related to the vaccines, what's special about these vaccines that might induce these blood clotting events? We don't know the answers to that yet, but that's part of the investigation.
Issues with AstraZeneca and J&J are complicating vaccine rollout in Europe and other places. But the executive director of the European Medicines Agency, Emer Cook, insists that the risk of death from COVID-19 is much greater than the risk of side effects.
I think it's important that we give the message that vaccines will help us in the fight against COVID, and we need to continue to use these vaccines.
As of now, Johnson & Johnson said there is no clear causal relationship between these rare blood clot events and the vaccine. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Coming up on VOA Asia, a home-brewed cup of coffee from the Philippines. This news from VOA Asia, former U.S. Senator Chris Dodd and two former State Department officials arrived in Taiwan Wednesday for a three-day visit and meetings with the Taiwanese president at a time of tense relations with China. You'll find this and all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Home-brewed coffee in the Philippines and remote farming technology are the topics on today's VOA Asia business scene. Here's Josh Nist.
With millions of Filipinos forced to stay at home under lockdown caused by the pandemic, a new wave of passion for home brewing coffee has formed. Thanks to a flourishing online community, many are bringing the cafe experience into their homes and even out onto the streets. Over quarantine, 21-year-old Stephen Villena began researching, making his own coffee, and eventually started selling bottled cold brew online. Today, he can be found brewing coffee along a popular strip in a residential neighborhood every Saturday afternoon.
I wanted to make a business.
I wanted to make a business since the pandemic, as with the lockdown, I have zero income. There was really no work when the lockdown started. Of course, the primary goal is to have income, but at the same time, it's to help these farmers.
Vienna has been working on his curbside coffee bar called C-Cap Coffee with his partner and friend since December. Another company, Yardstick Coffee, is a popular homegrown shop that does have a cafe, but most of its sales come from supplying beans and machines to wholesale businesses. But after the pandemic hit, owner Andre Chenko noticed a change in their usual clientele. They now operate the roastery every day and have temporarily converted their cafe into a stockroom and packaging area to keep up with the demand for coffee beans, mostly to be brewed at home. remote-controlled Venus flytraps, also known as roboplants, that tell farmers when they are hit by disease, could become reality after scientists develop a high-tech system for communicating with vegetation. Researchers in Singapore linked up plants to electrodes capable of monitoring the weak electrical pulses naturally emitted by greenery. This has enabled scientists to trigger a Venus flytrap to snap its jaws shut at the push of a button on a smartphone app. While the technology is still in its early stages, researchers such as Luo Yifei, a researcher at Singapore's Nanyang Technological University, believe it could eventually be used to build advanced plant-based robots that are able to pick up a host of fragile objects which are too delicate for rigid robotic arms.
So these signals will reflect the health status of the plants. So we hope to study the relationship of these signals and the environmental stresses, and hopefully this can instruct the agriculture practice.
Although large steps have been taken, there are still challenges to overcome. Scientists are still in the process of opening the flytrap's jaw back after they closed it remotely. This process would take 10 or more hours to happen naturally. For Business Scene, I'm Josh Nist.
Making headlines in Asia, a Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson said China demanded the United States immediately stop official contacts with Taiwan after a former U.S. senator and two former State Department officials arrived on the island Wednesday. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, as home package delivery has grown during the pandemic, so has the problem of theft. Matt Dibble takes a look at a device that aims to deter so-called porch pirates.
Having goods delivered to the doorstep has been a lifesaver for many during the pandemic. But there are challenges.
My partner and I were watching friends and neighbors and family and people close to us lose packages. It was happening more frequently than you would think.
Millions of packages go missing each day. According to CNR research, over 43% of U.S. online shoppers had a package stolen in 2020. There are various solutions, including lockboxes, or even giving the delivery company access to your home. Entrepreneur Larry Adamson has developed an alarm device that will also send alerts using Wi-Fi.
You can attach it to any size box. You can attach it to an envelope or anything you want. And when you clip it on, it sets an alarm. And then if you try and remove the clip or steal the device, a very loud alarm goes off.
The system, which stays at the home, will send an alert to users as soon as a package has arrived, hopefully avoiding the need for the alarm. But will delivery drivers take the extra time to clip the package protector on a package? Adamson thinks so, with an incentive.
If they know there's a possibility of earning a tip, they'll be more likely to take the time, you know, the 4 seconds it takes to clip a package.
Delivery people identify themselves using a home's unique QR code, creating a link that can lead to a tip. Whether an alarm is enough to deter every porch pirate remains to be seen. But a little gratitude for hardworking delivery people is a welcome innovation. Matt Dibble for VOA News.
While it may not yet be planting season outside in large parts of the Northern Hemisphere, inside some New Jersey shipping containers, it's always spring. Vladimir Lensky has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
It's a typical early spring landscape in the northern state of New Jersey. The trees are bare, the grass looks dull and brown. But in the heart of Robbinsville Township, inside what used to be a shipping container, a high-tech farm is flourishing.
The ones on the top may be a little bit smaller as the drainage goes through. Nutrients will have a little bit of a larger lettuce at the bottom. And then we'll extract them. And you can see the final product is a very small root system.
There are 256 stands with greens at this high-tech farm. Every week, there's a new harvest. The secret is hydroponics. a special draining system that circulates calcium nitrate solution, as well as nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium.
It's not liquid soil, but it does hold a lot of the nutrients that the plants will need. Believe it or not, soil actually holds a lot of beneficial organisms, bacteria, just those microorganisms in general, just so important, and that's the nutrients that the plants need.
Excess water and nutrients return to special reservoirs and then start circulating again. Plants are watered every 3 hours for about 10 minutes. The sunlight is artificial and comes from 196 LED strips. The temperature and the chemical makeup of air is strictly controlled. It is always plus 22 degrees Celsius. The humidity level is at 56%. And the amount of carbon dioxide is 1,800 parts per million.
We actually have to emit CO2 into the atmosphere. We have to pump it in if we're not here. So if I'm on vacation or it's the weekend, we have to pump in CO2.
And just like everything else these days, this farm can be run through a smartphone app. Robbinsville Township has been involved with this kind of farming since 2017.
We were the first in the United States to have a freight farm. We still might be the only ones, but I'm hoping there will be more, because one of our main objectives of getting this was to create a model that's sustainable, that we can share with other municipalities to say, hey, you could bring this to your community too. You can help your people too with fresh nutrition, 24/7, 365.
A very special relationship system has sprung to life around the farm as well. Senior citizens, volunteers, and school children help maintain this unique ecosystem created around one old shipping container. For Vladimir Lensky in New Jersey, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Scientists studying sea turtles say the ancient animal's numbers are dropping. They blame mostly human activity, but say they hope a new action plan could help the species mount a comeback. VOA's Arash Arabasadi tells us more.
Researchers with NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, catch a leatherback sea turtle off the coast of California.
Pull, 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 pull!
The tens of millions of years old species is in serious decline, says ecologist Scott Benson.
Estimates are that the population now is about 1,400 adult females remaining. That's down from literally tens of thousands a few decades ago.
Benson co-authored a new study that says the foraging area used by the leatherback sea turtle saw a population drop of about 80% in the past 30 years. He says this is amazing given the species' adaptability.
The leatherback turtle is an ancient mariner. They've been around for almost as long as 80 million years in their present form. Date back to the time of the dinosaurs. It's not a poorly adapted species. They've been through all kinds of things. Meteor strikes, climate changes, you name it.
He says the smaller numbers make the species more vulnerable to outside factors like international fishing and egg harvesting. Benson's team puts transmitters on turtles so their fishing fleets can avoid them. He says his team is doing what it can to boost the rapidly dwindling numbers.
We're down to the remnants right now, so any little thing now could potentially disrupt it. So we have just a very little time to turn it around.
All seven species of the leatherback are in trouble, but the new study focuses on the Western Pacific variety, which migrates more than 11,000 kilometers from Indonesia and the Solomon Islands to the U.S. West Coast to feast on jellyfish. NOAA recently released a new action plan calling for greater international cooperation. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
We wish we had more time to spend with you today on VOA Asia. That's all the time we have for our program. In the meantime, you can find us online. We're at Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to join us there until our next program at the same time tomorrow. Thanks for being with us, and thanks to our VOA Asia team, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.